Chapter 55. The Truth. The voice tickled his thoughts, teased his muddled mind.
Where are they?
It was the voice of the triangles, mechanical and yet still alive.
Are you there? Another one is missing.
The voice of the triangles, and yet it was different. Somehow almost feminine. Not a woman's voice, but a woman's concern, a woman's depth of feeling.
Why don't they answer? Where are they?
His eyes fluttered sleepily. The voice was something important, something he knew he needed to think about. The pain hung on his body like a weighted suit. Every inch seemed to throb and pulse in a muted symphony of complaint.
They won't make it. They won't make it. He is too strong.
Perry blinked again, clawing his way to consciousness. Triangles, but not his. Were these the ones his own investors had mentioned when they said that strange phrase, "We do that without telephones, talk to triangles"? He felt the Three Stooges stirring. The female voice faded away. Perry wasn't ready to get up. He lay on the couch, his weight on his left side, wondering if he should just spend the rest of his life there, on his good side, not bothering to get up and suffer any more pain or wonder what fabulous secret the Stooges might deal out next. His ass still burned. It felt as if he were still sitting on the stove. A truly nasty smell filled the air. So this was what burning human flesh smells like? Wonderful. There was another smell, something more pungent, more dead-smelling. But it wafted in and out and couldn't compete with the all-encompassing smell of Perry's home-cooked rump roast.
Why do you fight us?
And there they were. No mistaking that voice. Male, arrogant, bossy. His own beloved triangles.
Who is that other voice?
Perry asked, ignoring their question.
There's someone else infected, isn't there? Who is it? Does he live in the apartments?
We won't tell you. Why do you keep killing us? We're the only ones who can save you now.
What the hell are you talking about? Save me? I know I'm as good as dead.
No, it's the others who want to kill you, not us. Not us, Perry. We would never hurt you.
The triangles weren't trying to kill him? Bullshit. They were going to burrow out his insides and wear him like a coat. Or take over his mind and dance him around the street like a fucking human Muppet.
Someone is coming. Is it Columbo?
Perry heard nothing. Was their hearing better than his? How strong were they now?
You hear someone out in the hall? Is it the neighbor who was here before?
No. Footsteps are lighter. It's Columbo. Kill Columbo.
It's not Columbo. Why the hell do the police scare you so bad?
Because they are coming to get us. They are looking for us to kill us. Why don't you understand?
Take it easy. Don't get excited and start screaming in my head again, okay?
Perry breathed slowly. He tried to project his calmness, hoping that if the triangles could overflow emotion into him, he could do the same in reverse.
Why do you think they're coming to get you now?
Don't you get? If they kill you, they kill us.
It hit him like a bullet between the eyes. Perry's analytical process stopped dead still, as the truth suddenly rocked home. The truth that had been there from the start, and all he'd had to do was ask. The soldiers weren't coming to save him. They were coming to kill him, to keep the triangle larva from hatching. It made perfect sense, although part of his mind still fought against it. If the soldiers wanted to kill him, then there was truly no way out, no escape, no chance.
Do you mean the soldiers are coming to kill me?
Yes, yes, stupid. Yes, coming to kill you.
He was fucked. He was completely and utterly fucked. The triangles were killing him from the inside. Soldiers wanted to gun him down and stop the triangles from becoming whatever it is they became. He had no idea who the soldiers were, where they were, what they looked like. They could be anybody. Anybody. And he'd sent an invitation through the internet, painted a fucking bullseye on his own forehead. His father's voice filtered into his head, a once faint memory, now strong and vital.
It's you against the world, boy. You just remember that. The world is a harsh place, where only the strong survive. If you ain't strong, people will use you up and throw you away. You gotta show the world who's boss, boy. Show them with strength. That's why I'm so tough on you. That, and because you're one stupid cornhole and bastard and you piss me off every chance you get. Someday, boy, you'll thank me. Someday, you'll understand.
For the first time in his life, Barry did understand. He'd spent a decade trying to escape his father's legacy of violence and abuse and anger. But now he knew that was a mistake.
You were right, Daddy. You was always right.
Fuck them all. He was a Dossie, goddammit, and he'd sure as hell start acting like one.
Columbo is here.
As the last of his sanity slipped away, Perry heard a knock at his door. His eyes narrowed to predatory slits. His father's voice.
You gonna let him push you around like that, boy?
No, sir, Daddy. I sure as hell ain't.
Chapter 56, Company. Bill Miller knocked on Perry's door again. Enough was enough. Perry was home. Period. He'd logged on to his instant messenger not more than 30 minutes earlier and signed off as soon as Bill sent him a message. Bill had immediately hopped into his car, and now he was here, outside Perry's door. Perry could have signed on from anywhere in the world, of course, but his Ford was still under the carport awning, a foot of clean snow behind it. It hadn't moved for at least a couple of days. Bill knocked again. Nothing. Was Perry sick? Had he lost his temper, done something really bad, something he couldn't face? The guy was so sensitive about his violent streak, even a loud argument might fill him so full of guilt he couldn't face the day. Sick, guilty, whatever. Bill had to get to the bottom of this. His friend needed help, and that was that. He gave it one more triple knock.
Perry, buddy, it's Bill.
No answer.
Perry, everyone's worried sick. You don't have to answer, but if you're there, let me know you're okay.
No answer. He fished in the pocket of his leather coat for a piece of paper to leave a note. The hair on the back of his neck suddenly stood on end, caused by the peculiarly strong feeling that he was being watched. He looked up at the peephole, hand frozen in his pocket. He heard the door's chain lock slowly scrape aside, followed by the click of a deadbolt sliding back into its housing. The door opened slowly. Perry's hulking form came into view. Bill heard himself breathe in sharply, a comical sound of surprise. Perry looked like a Bruce Willis stand-in from one of the Die Hard movies, only bigger. His long-sleeved white T-shirt was spotted with blood, blood that looked black, where it had dried in patches spreading down from the left shoulder. He stood on one leg, holding the door for balance. The other leg hung loosely beneath him, not touching the floor, like a hunting dog on point. The hanging leg had another T-shirt wrapped around its calf. Bill had no idea of that one's original color. It was now a deep, crusty burgundy, like clothes that had been dropped in the mud, taken off at the back door, and left to dry in the sun. Perry had a bruised bump on his head the size of a golf ball. An old scruff of bright red beard glowed electrically against his pale white skin. No, not like Bruce Willis. Like Arnold Schwarzenegger. Perry's muscles rippled with every movement, especially on his neck, which looked like steel cables wrapped tightly with veins, then with skin. Perry hadn't looked this defined, this big, this threatening, in years. Not since they'd been sophomores in college. Bill realized, suddenly, that by hanging out with him every day, he'd lost touch with the fact that Perry Dossie was a giant of a man. Despite the haggard appearance, Perry's eyes were his most attention-demanding feature. Not because of the fact that the skin around them was black and blue, either from a shot to the face or some serious lack of sleep, but from the look in the eyes, the spaced-out psycho look, like when Jack Nicholson axed his way through the door in The Shining. Bill had always been the type to trust his instincts. At this moment, his instincts yanked at him to leave, to get the fuck out of there right now. Fight-or-flight response kicking in with a 100% majority vote for flight. But Perry was obviously in trouble. Something was very, very wrong. Postal was the word that flashed through Bill's brain. Perry Dossie has gone postal. They both stood for a few seconds without speaking. Bill broke the interlude.
Perry, are you okay?
There was no fucking question. As soon as Perry opened the door and saw Bill standing there in his black leather jacket with his neatly trimmed hair and immaculate appearance, Perry knew for certain that he was one of the soldiers. Bill had been watching him all along. He might even be the one who put the triangle seeds on him. Who can tell of these crazy government fucks? When had they recruited Bill? After college? During college? How far back did this conspiracy go? Maybe that's why Bill had volunteered as a roommate so long ago. That made sense. That was logical. Bill had come back to check on the experiment. He'd probably freaked when Perry stopped going to work. When Perry filled out the online form, they sent Bill to look in on him. Why else would he be here right now? Bill was a fucking narc, waiting to sell Perry out to the soldiers. Well, the backstabbing, traitorous snitch wasn't going to be telling his government butt buddies anything. Not now, not later, not ever.
I'm fine,
Perry said.
Come on in.
He took a small hop back into the apartment, making room for Bill to enter. Strange odors filtered out of the open door. Bill's instincts clamored louder, swelling in volume and intensity, beseeching him to turn tail and run, baby, run.
Well, I have to be getting back to work, no doubt about it,
Bill said.
I just came to see if you were okay, buddy. You don't look so good. Are you sure you feel all right?
Did Perry have any idea how bad he looked? Was he on drugs? Maybe strung out on heroin or something? Bill couldn't stop looking at his eyes, the way they burned with intensity and simmering emotions. Bill had seen that look many times during the past 10 years. It was the look that came over Perry's face just before he punched someone. The look just before the snap of the ball. That look was predatory, and it meant serious trouble. But in those 10 years, that look had never been fixed on Bill. Until now. Time to go. Bill looked scared. He obviously hadn't counted on Perry figuring out the plan. Nobody thought good old Perry was smart enough to figure out the plan. They'd underestimated him. Bill had underestimated him. And now that Bill knew the depth of his soon-to-be fatal mistake, there was nothing he could do. Nothing except run. But Scary Perry Dossie was way ahead of the game. Bill concentrated on speaking in a calm, neutral voice.
Perry, you're freaking me out, and you look like you're about to get violent.
He slowly backed away from the door.
I'm going to leave now. You're going to go into your apartment and calm down. You relax, and I'll be back in a bit.
Wait!
Perry's word was a plea, pregnant with need, although he kept his voice almost as low and calm as Bill's placating tone.
You gotta help me. I...
Perry swayed a little bit, his one good leg sagging under him.
I just can't...
Perry collapsed, falling into the hall like a sack of rotten meat and bones. Bill instinctively reached out to help his friend. Perry knew that he would. People just couldn't help such things, especially the government people, because the government is here to help you, right? But for Bill, it was too late to react. He tried to jump back, even before he saw the knife, but he was too close. He tried to jump back to get away, but Perry wasn't going to let that happen. As soon as Perry hit the floor, the rush of adrenaline blocked out all feelings of pain from his abused body. He rolled over his left shoulder and swung wide, with a 6-inch steak knife clutched unforgivingly in his right hand. The blade struck Bill's right inside thigh, sliding noiselessly through jeans, through skin, through quadriceps. It finally thudded to a stop at the femur, the tip embedding in the bone and snapping free. Perry watched Bill's eyes go wide with shock, fear, and pain. Bill stared down at the knife, at the blade sunk deep in his thigh. The blood didn't come until Perry wrenched the blade back for a second strike. Blood squirted out in a deep red stream, splattering on the hallway's off-white walls and landing on the burnt orange acrylic carpet that had been ugly even when it was new. Perry rolled up to his knees, head tilted forward, eyes flashing, lips curled in a demonic grin of anger and predation. He thrust the blade upward with the power of a knockout uppercut. Bill tried to jump clear, but his wounded leg wouldn't hold him. He fell weakly backwards, the knife's upward arc whizzing through the air, its jagged tip just barely missing Bill's face. Bill landed on his back, blood still gushing from his leg. Perry lurched forward, snarling, spittle flying from his sneering lips. He was a monster, a growling 6'5" vision from hell. He brought the blade down in an overhand thrust. Bill reactively brought his hands up, palms out, to protect himself from the slashing knife. Perry's strength drove the ragged, broken knife point clear through Bill's upturned right palm. Jagged metal tore through cartilage, tendons, and scraped across metacarpals until the nice wooden handle slammed into the palm, leaving 5 inches of the bloody blade jutting forth from the back of Bill's hand. Bill's eyes reactively closed as hot blood splattered on his face. He never saw Perry's left hand ball up into a gnarled fist. The fist blasted into Bill's nose with a muffled crunch. A second blow hammered home, spraying fine droplets of blood into his face and hair. Bill's traitorous body fell limp. Perry hopped off him immediately, grabbed his wrist, and hop-dragged him into the apartment. Bill weighed maybe 150. Dragging him was effortless, even with a bum leg. Perry shut and locked the door.
He's not dead. Kill him.
We're not going to kill him till I get some answers.
Blood, steady and red, pulsed from the cut in Bill's thigh, giving his jeans a rapidly spreading dark purple patch.
Kill him.
Shut up! I'm not going to kill him! We're doing this my way!
Bill had to have some answers, and Perry was going to hear every last one of them. The pure, narcotic effect of sheer hatred surprised him. Bill was the enemy. Perry wanted to kill the enemy. Bill was one of the soldiers sent to experiment, then observe, then exterminate. Yes, indeedy duty, exterminate, but that's not going to happen, Billy boy. Bill let out a moan. He rolled slightly on the floor. He coughed and spit out a large clot of blood. Snarling, Perry jerked him to his feet and pushed him backward across the living room. Bill fell heavily into the couch. Perry's voice was a low rumble, a menacing drawl that hadn't escaped his lips in years.
You want to get up when I hit you, boy? You got to learn to stay down, unless you're ready for some more punishments.
He grabbed Bill's wounded right hand, which spurted blood in all directions thanks to the knife still embedded in the palm. Perry wrapped his hand around the knife handle and drove it into the wall just above the couch. The jagged tip punched into the plaster, pinning Bill's hand.
You like that, snitch? You like that, spy? Then let's get you a second helping.
Perry hopped into the kitchen and grabbed another knife from the butcher's block. He didn't even glance at the chicken scissors. Moving almost as fast as if he'd had two legs, he then hopped into the bedroom and grabbed a wrinkled, dirty sock from the floor. Bill's head lolled from side to side as he struggled for consciousness, blood pouring from his leg, his hand, his nose.
Please stop!
Perry grabbed Bill's good hand.
Are you talking to me, boy? You speak when you're spoken to. You gotta learn better than that.
Perry shoved the sock into Bill's mouth, forcing the dirty fabric in so far that Bill gagged. With a primitive grunt of aggression, Perry slammed Bill's good hand against the wall, palm out. He reared back with the fresh knife, then drove the blade through Bill's exposed palm. Bill roared in pain, clarity of mind returning in full at a rather unfortunate moment. The dirty sock muffled his cries of agony. Bill tried to pull free, which made the blades cut deeper still into his ravaged hands. His body simply didn't have the strength. He slumped back into the couch, a portrait of defeat, his bleeding hand stretching out on either side of his limply hanging head.
Neighbors,
Perry said in a hiss, his eyes darting first to the window, then to the door.
Goddamn nosy neighbors might be in on it.
He hopped to the door and stared out the peephole. Even through the distorted view, he could see blood on the hallway's walls and carpeting. Someone would notice it. He didn't have much time. Time enough, however, to get some answers from the informant nailed to the wall.
Kill him!
Perry stared at Bill. His friend, Bill Miller. His friend.
My God, what have I done? What's happening to me?
He is Columbo. He is the soldiers.
It can't be.
He's here, isn't he? Why would he be here now if he wasn't Columbo? Kill him!
They were right. The emails, the calls, that convenient instant message showing up at his door. Bill knew what was going on. He knew everything. How callous, how heartless could this bastard be? He had feigned friendship while watching the triangles grow and fester and swell and chew Perry up from the inside as if he were a fucking goddamn caterpillar. Bill had watched all along. But he could only watch at work. What about the rest of the time? What about all the time Perry spent at home, in the apartment, particularly in the last few days? How are they watching him then? Bugs? Hidden cameras? Watching his instant message and email traffic? Maybe behind a light. Maybe inside the TV. Maybe inside the damn TV. And if they'd watched him all that time, they were watching him now. They were watching him carve up Billy the Betrayer. They wouldn't just let that happen. They were coming. Coming to rescue Billy. Perry took Bill's head into his hands and stared into his glassy eyes.
They'll be too late, Billy boy. You hear me? They'll be too fucking late to bail your ass out of this one.
Bill screamed, but the sock muffled the noise.
You'd best knock that shit off, boy,
Perry said, still staring into Bill's terrified eyes, eyes that revealed searing pain and pure, raw terror.
Quit your crying, boy, or I'll give you something to cry about.
Bill screamed louder, trying to pull back from the bull-necked horror before his eyes. Perry snarled as he grabbed Bill's broken nose and shook it viciously from side to side. Bill's body shuddered with fresh agony. He thrashed like a man in the electric chair, muscles contorting so violently that one knife-pierced hand pulled free from the plaster. The blade still jutted out from the back of his hand. Perry grabbed both Bill's blood-slick wrist and the knife handle, then slammed the blade back into the wall. This time, he felt a distinct and sudden resistance as the blade dug deep into a wall stud. Old Billy boy wasn't going to pull that one free any time soon. No siree, bub. Not any time soon. Bill fought down the pain, his mind freaked beyond the point of clear thought. Somehow, he found the inner power to stop screaming, stop struggling, despite the seemingly endless torture from a man whom only minutes before he'd known as his dearest friend. Perry leaned in, so close that Bill felt the heat from his breath. Perry held his fingers less than half an inch from Bill's nose, thumb and forefinger, ready to grab again at a moment's notice, ready to inflict more of that brain-shearing agony.
Like I said, boy, stop your crying or I'll kill you right fucking now.
Bill stared up through tears that refused to be blinked away. The friend-turned-psycho leaned over him, perched on one leg. Bill's fresh blood had smeared all over Perry's shirt, wetting the brown-black stains. The sock filled his mouth with a sickly, dry cotton feel. It tasted much as Bill imagined an old dirty sock should, moldy and suffocating. Warm blood continued to pour from his nose, down his face, and onto his chest. Blood from his punctured hands rolled down his arms to collect in wet pools at his armpits, soaking outward in an expanding, tacky-hot pit stain. How had this happened? He'd come to check on his best friend, and now he was crucified to the wall, staring up at the bloody, giant, wild-eyed, snarling, psychotic nightmare that was Perry Dossie in name only.
Okay,
Perry said in a whisper.
Now I'm going to take the sock out of your mouth, and when I do, I'm going to ask you some questions. Whether you live or die is up to you. The second you scream, I'm going to pull that knife out of your hand and shove it through your eye and stir your brain like Skippy peanut butter. It's going to hurt. It's going to hurt a lot. And I don't give a fuck, but I think you know that already, don't you, Billy boy? Do you know that I don't give a fuck, Billy boy?
Bill nodded in agreement. Perry's voice had grown calm, cold, and relaxed, but his eyes hadn't changed. Bill's chest felt packed with coppery terror. Fear filled his mind, leaving no room for thoughts of escape. Perry was in charge. Bill would do whatever he said, whatever it took, to stay alive.
Oh, Jesus, don't let me die here. Don't let this happen, please. Oh, dear God, please.
Good,
Perry said.
That's good, Bill. I'm sure you've been trained well and warned about the consequences of this mission, so I won't feel a bit of remorse. If your voice rises above conversational levels, you're not going to be having a whole lot of fun. Do you understand what will happen if your voice rises above conversational levels, Bill?
Bill nodded again. Perry dropped to the couch, resting a knee on either side of Bill's thighs. Bill saw him grimace a bit, but then that fleeting expression vanished, the psychotic stare back in place. Suddenly Perry looked away, his eyes losing focus. He seemed to be staring at the wall, or perhaps some point beyond the wall. His head cocked to the right ever so slightly. He looks like a dog listening to one of those ultrasonic whistles, Bill thought.
Look, I'm telling you, he'll talk,
Perry said.
We don't need to kill him.
Oh, Christ, oh, Jesus, oh, my Lord, he's completely insane. I'm going to die here. I'm going to die just like that.
Perry spoke angrily to his unseen companion.
Fuck off. This is my show now. You just shut up and let me think.
Bill felt his spirit sag down, weighted with doom. There was no hope. Apparently, the voice stopped. Perry's stare returned, a piercing fixation that drilled into Bill's eyes, which were wide, white, and wet. Bill felt weakness slip over him, slowly pulling him into unconsciousness. This time, he didn't fight it. Chapter 57. Dew on the Move. Dew pinched the uncomfortable, thick cellular between his shoulder and ear, steered with one hand, and with the other punched an address into the Buick dashboard's GPS computer.
How long since the client sent the form, Murray?
About 20 minutes.
Have we contacted him yet?
There's no answer at the number he gave us. We've sent a return email, but no response there yet either.
Send Margaret and her rapid response teams for me. I have to find the apartment complex. Tell the squads to get to Dossie's apartment complex, but do not enter. Tell them to wait for my call. Leave my three teams at Gwen's place to make sure the media doesn't get in till they finish scrubbing the place of any triangle references.
Dew broke the connection and put the cellular away. He almost rear-ended an old woman driving a Civic. He leaned on the horn, trying to get her out of the way. It was Sunday, college on semester break, but there were still college kids crossing the street, slow and calm, like they owned the world, like they were immortal. Right about now, Dew would be more than happy to put that immortality up against the front bumper of the Buick. He swung into the wrong lane and passed the Civic. The GPS said he was 15 minutes away, but with traffic, it would probably take just over 20 to reach Dossie's apartment. Chapter 58. BFF, or Best Friends Forever. Perry knew he didn't have much time. Either the soldiers were on their way, or Bill the Betrayer would soon bleed to death. The wet puddle on the couch grew steadily, as if Bill were pissing blood. Perry knew that if he timed it right, he could get the information and the soldiers could save his friend. Correction, his so-called friend. Bill's eyes glazed over, and his head sagged forward.
Oh, no, you don't, you little informant.
Perry slapped hard with his left hand. Bill's head shot back so fast, his temple bounced off the wall. The slap sounded red, warm, and satisfying.
You don't know what suffering is, Billy boy, Perry thought, but I'm going to do my best to give you a little taste of what I've been through.
Bill's scared rabbit look returned to his blood-smeared face.
How could the soldiers use some weak ass like this? It was probably a trick.
Yeah, trick. Bill was trying to lure him into overconfidence.
That shit isn't going to trick me, Billy boy. No bow to doubt it.
He was smarter than these fuckers. They didn't know what they'd started by fucking with a Dossie, because a Dossie doesn't take shit, no sir, no how.
Perry reached out and pulled the sock from Bill's mouth. Bill breathed deeply, but other than that, he didn't make a sound. Perry licked his lips. He tasted blood. He didn't know if it was his or Bill's. Eager for the final answer, he leaned in close and asked his vital question.
Who the fuck do you work for, and what are the triangles going to turn into?
Perry's face was only inches from Bill's. The dark circles around Perry's eyes made it look as if he hadn't slept in days. The whites were so bloodshot that they took on a pinkish hue. Bright red stubble stuck out offensively. There were open sores on his lips. It looked like he'd bitten through them not very long ago.
But that question. Triangle. Perry, what are you talking about?
Bill knew it was the wrong thing to say, but he couldn't think of another answer. Perry's eyes swelled with anger, adding to the already psychotic stare.
Don't screw with me, Bill.
His voice carried the threat of death.
You and your little Jedi mind tricks can just fuck off. I'm not buying what you're selling, Junior. Now, I'll ask you again. What are the triangles becoming?
Bill's breath came in short, ragged gasps. What was this madness? What did Perry want to hear? Bill tried to fight back tears of frustration and panic. Pain ripped through his body in a nonstop cacophony of raw nerves and cutting metal edges. It was so hard to think. He struggled for words, struggled to make sense of it all.
I don't know what you're talking about, Perry. It's me. It's Bill, for God's sakes. Why do you want to do this to me?
A smile crept across Perry's face. He reached out for one of the knives that had Bill's hands impaled on the wall. Bill's body went rigid with white-hot tension.
Getting a little loud in here, don't you think, Billy boy?
I'm sorry,
Bill said quickly, his hushed whisper filled with fear and pleading.
I'm sorry. It won't happen again.
Goddamn right it won't, Billy, old sport. If it does happen again, you'll be dead before you can apologize. Your warnings are gone. You're in double jeopardy now, where the points can really add up. So I'll ask you just one more time. What are the triangles becoming?
Bill's mind spun wildly for an answer. Anything that would keep him alive, even a little bit longer. He had to come up with some bullshit and fast, but it was so hard to think, impossible to concentrate. Perry was going to kill him.
I don't know. They didn't tell me that.
Like hell they didn't,
Perry said, never losing his predatory stare.
You got one more chance, Billy, and then I'm going to carve you up.
Bill scrambled for an answer, but he couldn't make his mind focus past the pain, past the psychotic situation, past death that stared him in the face. What had Perry called him? The informant? Informant for what? For whom? What raving, paranoid vision did Perry see through those bloodshot eyes?
Perry, I swear they didn't tell me!
He watched the rage flare up in Perry's eyes. Bill kept talking, his voice a nasal, pleading, pitiful cry.
It's not my fault they don't tell me anything. They just told me to keep an eye on you. Let them know what you were doing.
The words seemed to strike a chord. Perry's look changed, as if Bill's words answered some important question, but he still looked far from placated. Bill continued, clutching to one faint glimmer of hope.
It's not my job to know what the hell they turned into.
Perry nodded as if he accepted the story.
Okay, maybe you know and maybe you don't. Just tell me who you're working for.
I think you already know that.
Bill held his breath, waiting for a violent reaction. The salty tang of blood mingled in his mouth with a tangible taste of fear. The flicker of hope glowed a bit brighter as Perry nodded and smiled. Dizziness swept over Bill. The room seemed to spin. He couldn't keep this up.
Harry, you're out of control. You're paranoid. You're hallucinating.
A shiver rippled through Bill's body. The apartment suddenly felt so cold, so icy cold. Black spots formed in front of his eyes, and another dizzy spell threw the room into crazy, unpredictable motion. The rat fucker was passing out again. Perry bitch-slapped him three times, three vicious lefts, each harder than the last. It felt good to lash out like that. You can't let people faint on you, not when you need information. All this pussy-ass narc needed was a little Dossie-style discipline, because you've got to have discipline. Bill blinked a few times, but his eyes were once again clear and lucid. Perry had hit so hard that his hand stung from the slaps. The right side of Bill's face started to swell almost immediately, growing red and plump like a ballpark Frank.
Kill him!
Shut the fuck up!
Perry'd had just about enough of the triangles. Oh, yes, sir, he had. They were in his house, after all. His house! And a Dossie was always master of his castle. He knew if he didn't take control, if he didn't take charge, he'd go crazy. He just couldn't stand it anymore. Couldn't stand that voice in his head every fucking minute of every fucking day.
You shut your little mouth, or I swear as soon as I'm done with the informant here, I'll turn the Three Stooges into the dynamic duo, no matter what it does to me.
There was an ultra-brief burst of high pitch as the triangles accessed dynamic duo. Then nothing. He felt something inside him change, as suddenly and definitely as the switch thrown on an electric chair. The power structure had just traded hands. He knew it, and the triangles knew it. He wasn't afraid of them anymore. It's my house, Perry thought. A confident smile parted his bleeding, cracked lips. It's my house, and you're all going to live by my rules. Bill's arms grew heavy, weak, yet he couldn't relax, couldn't let them drop and pull against the blade stuck through his palms. Only by keeping his hands very, very still could he maintain the pain at just below a screaming level. The tension of facing that agony and the fear he felt anticipating Perry's next move had his muscles taut with stress, tiring them quickly. Perry started blinking rapidly. He shook his head, violently, like a dog shaking off after a swim. Then he looked right at Bill, his bloodshot eyes suddenly wide with terror.
"Bill, help me,"
Perry said. The affected accent was gone. It was his friend again, not the creature that was torturing him to death.
"Perry."
Bill fought for the words. He had to act now.
"Perry, you have to call."
He wasn't sure how long he had before his strength gave out, and his hands fell, the weight pulling down against the knives in grinding torture. For some odd reason, that thought rang worse than the concept of a knife through the eye. How much longer till his arms would give out? He already felt the burn, his deltoids and biceps simmering with fatigue. He didn't have much time, not much time. Hard to believe he was going to die like this.
"Call the police."
The words seemed to rebound inside Perry's head. He'd been free, free of their control, for just a few seconds. He could have kept them at bay, too, would have, but Bill had to go and prove them right. "Call the police," Bill had said. "The motherfucking police."
"We told you."
Could they sound smug? They sounded smug. Without conscious thought, Perry let go of his friendship for Bill Miller. Enough fucking around. He had to get the info, and get it now.
"When are they coming for me, Billy?"
Bill said nothing. Perry grabbed a handful of shirt and roughly shook Bill to emphasize his words.
"When are they coming to get me?"
Bill's eyes showed clear and fearful for only a moment. Then he went glassy again for the last time. His head nodded down limply. He didn't move. Perry hit him until his own palms bled. It didn't make any difference. Bill wasn't coming out of it this time. Perry felt at Bill's neck. Not knowing how to check for a pulse, Perry checked his own neck, found the jugular, which beat strong and true. He probed the same spot on Bill's neck and felt nothing.
"Kill him. You've got to kill him now. Please do it now."
"You got your wish. He's dead."
The informant's eyes remained open, fixed in a perpetual, empty, half-lidded stare. Perry stood on his good leg and looked at the corpse. Bill was dead. A traitor's death, and well-deserved. He'd been one of them. No bout a doubt it. Chapter 59. The Call. Al Turner fumed. Not only was that damn freak of nature kid raising holy hell again, but Al's hemorrhoids were worse than ever. He'd used what seemed like a gallon of Preparation H, but he might as well have been smearing mayonnaise on his asshole for all the good that it did.
"My name's Al Turner," he said into the phone. "I already called once. I'm in apartment B303. He lives right downstairs and been screaming his head off for days. I've had it."
"Sir, a car's on the way. You're willing to file a formal complaint?"
"Absolutely. I've been down here and asked him to shut up, and I'm not dealing with it. He's nuts. I think you better tell your people to be careful, though. He's a huge guy. I mean, like, pro wrestling huge."
"Thank you, sir. The officers will be there as soon as possible. Please stay away from the apartment. The officers will handle it."
"No problem. I'm not going down there. That guy's a fucking fruitcake."
Chapter 60. Stepping Out.
"We want to see you."
Perry stood quietly.
"So whose eyes are working now?"
"All of us can see."
He'd be damned if he'd let his balls see anything. That was just too fucking much. He slid his t-shirt sleeve up past his elbow, giving the triangle on his forearm a full view of Bill Miller's corpse.
"Yes, he's dead. You are right."
Perry pulled down the shirt and turned to stare vacantly at his former friend. The situation hit home, coming to rest in his mind with a heavy, cold iron weight. Bill's blank eyes stared at the floor. The trickle of blood easing out of his nose had slowed to a stop. Blood covered the couch and carpet, as if Bill had just come out of the shower, fully dressed, with his clothes soaking wet, and sat down to watch CSI. Except he hadn't just sat down. Perry had put him there. Bill's hands had steak knives jammed through the palms, nailing them to the wall. Blood streaked the wallpaper, sticky, gooey, and red.
Oh, Jesus. What the hell is happening to me?
He'd killed Bill. Tricked him. Stabbed him. Dragged him into the apartment, like a trapdoor spider, snatching a hapless insect back into a lightless, hopeless den. Nailed him to the wall and tortured him before letting him bleed to death. Bleed to death, while Perry shouted questions in his face. It was a shitty way to go. He just murdered his best friend. He should have been swamped with guilt, overwhelmed with it. Yet surprisingly, he felt nothing but a cold, icy satisfaction. Only the strong survive, and that little informant hadn't been strong enough to cut the mustard.
We gotta get the hell out of here.
The high-pitched searching sound echoed in his head.
We need to go to Wajamika.
It was a strange comment, but nothing the Triangles did seemed to surprise him anymore.
What the hell is a Wajamiga?
Not what, a where. Wajamiga. In a place called Michigan. Do you know where it is?
Michigan? Sure, you're in it. I'll have to look up Wajamiga. Let me MapQuest it.
Perry turned towards where his Mac used to sit before he remembered he'd smashed it to bits.
I think I have a regular map.
We need to go there. There are people who can help us.
He felt their excitement, pure and unbridled. Images flashed in his head. A dirt road he'd never seen before. Black movement in a dense forest. A pair of sprawling oaks. Tree limbs vibrating in tune to the throbbing forest floor. And a brief flash of the green door from his dreams. Another image. A pattern. A set of lines that looked like a Japanese kanji character. The symbol was nothing from his memory. It was theirs. And it held power.
Can we see? Show us.
He hopped to the junk drawer. In the back was a much-abused Michigan road map. Most of the Upper Peninsula was obscured by a huge ink stain in the rough shape of a kidney bean, but it didn't mar the map's southern area. He found Wajamiga in the thumb area that was Michigan's hand shape. He folded the map a few times, leaving Wajamiga visible, then found a pen, one that didn't leak, and circled the town. Perry scrawled, "This is the place." The phrase and the circled town seemed to call to him, and he wondered why he had written the words. He turned his arm so that the triangle could see the map. There was a pause, then a brief flicker of the searching sound, and then overflow emotion exploded in his body.
Yes, that's it! That's it! We must go to Wajamiga!
Their joy felt exquisite, all-encompassing, a drug that instantly roared through his veins and pulsated in his brain. The strange symbol again filled his world. A pattern of lines and angles. The image seemed to swell before his eyes, glow with power, like some mystical talisman. Everything else faded away. The world turned to black, leaving only the symbol floating before him, powerful and undeniable. This was Triangle Overflow, he knew, but he couldn't stop it. He didn't want to stop it. The symbol was their purpose, their meaning for existence. They wanted it more than they wanted food or even survival. They have to build this, he thought, and I have to help them. Help them build. It's so beautiful. Perry shook his head, fought his way out of the narcotic trance. His breath came in short gasps. The fear again, but different this time. Different because he'd actually wanted to help them. They'd been in his thoughts before, but never so bad as that. He realized he was holding a knife in his left hand. The map lay on the counter, drops of blood blocking towns like craters of some nuclear bomb run. He saw that the knife tip was bloody before he felt the pain. Like a ventriloquist dummy, he slowly turned his head to examine the underside of his right forearm. In that short trance, he'd carved the symbol into his skin. 3 inches long, it shimmered in wet red lines. The deep scratches oozed the little blood that trickled down in thin rivulets, rolling past either side of his thick biceps. He hadn't felt a thing. He stared at his handiwork. 2-inch-long perbo. They were crossed by a short line, from the middle of which stretched one long 2-inch line. four horizontal lines crossed that one long line, and the symbol was finished up by two lines on the outside. It sort of looked like a child's stick figure, dancing, but with no head, no arms, and it had a rib cage. The triangles wanted to go to Wajamiga, needed to go, the way a junkie needs another fix. Wanted to go to Wajamiga and build something this symbol represented, whatever the hell that was. If they wanted something that badly, it couldn't be good for him. But he didn't have anywhere else to go. The soldiers were coming, and at this point, one direction seemed as good as the next. The important thing was to get the flying fuck out of the apartment. Putting his exhaustion up on a mental shelf, he hopped to the bedroom. That strange smell hit him again. A nasty smell. A rotting smell. This time, it didn't waft away on some invisible air current, but lingered. He ignored it. He had more important things to worry about. He hauled a duffel bag out of the bedroom closet, then thought better of it and grabbed his backpack. Nothing big, just the nylon one he'd used to haul books around campus a million years ago. He imagined that hopping with a weighted duffel bag hanging from one arm might prove difficult. As he put the backpack on his bed, he saw that it glistened with spots of wet blood. It took him a few seconds to register that the sticky red smear had come from his hands. He was still covered in blood, both Bill's and his own. Time was a factor. He knew that far too well. After all, there was a man crucified to his living room wall. A dead guy, with friends and co-workers who wore snappy little uniforms, and who would love nothing more than to put several bullets into Perry's diseased body. But he couldn't go outside covered in blood and gore. He quickly hopped to the bathroom and stripped his clothes. They were soiled with blood, both wet and flaky dry. Perry felt the burst of overflow excitement as the triangles in his back, his arm, and in other places, looked upon the world together for the first time. There wasn't time for a full-out shower. A naked sink washing would have to suffice. Besides, he didn't even want to look in the tub and see the floating remnants of the scabs that had heralded the start of this waking nightmare. The last clean washcloth quickly turned pink as he scrubbed the blood from his body. Flakes of dry blood fell into the running water. He turned off the sink, let the washcloth fall to the floor, grabbed a towel, and started drying off. It was at that moment he noticed his shoulder. Or rather, he noticed the mold. The mold was under the band-aids, green gossamer tufts peeking out past plastic edges. The fine little hairs looked like the last downy strands growing on an old man's head before baldness finally takes hold. That's where the strange smell had been coming from. His shoulder. The musty, rotten scent filled the bathroom. The band-aids remained firmly affixed to his wound, but under the strip he saw something else, something black and wet and horrible. The band-aids had to come off. He had to see what was in there. Perry used his fingernails to pull a small corner of band-aid off his skin, enough for him to get a good thumb and forefinger grip, then slowly tore it back. The flap of skin peeled back. A gummy ribbon of stagnant black goo ran down his chest, hot at first, and ice cold by the time it had reached his stomach. The smell that had only hinted at its power during the past day was now released. A satanic genie billowing out of a bottle, it filled the bathroom like a cloud of death. The dead stench instantly made Perry's stomach turn inside out. He spewed bile into the sink, where some of it mingled with the running water from the tap and headed down the drain. Perry stared at the wound, not even bothering to wipe the vomit from his mouth and chin. There was more of the viscous muck packed into the wound, like blackcurrant jelly at the bottom of a half-empty jar. The dead triangle had rotted. Horror stole his breath and made his heart hammer a triple-time beat of desperation. The consistency resembled a rotten pumpkin a month after Halloween. Pasty, runny, and decomposing. Green tufts of the same gossamer mold spotted both the wound and the dead triangle. Shiny black rot clung to the mold filaments. The most disturbing part of the image in the mirror? He wasn't sure if all the rot came from the dead triangle's fork-punctured corpse. Some of the green mold looked as if it grew right out of his skin, like a creeping, crawling messenger of demise. The sink's running hot water slowly clouded the mirror. In a daze, Perry wiped the steam clear. and found himself face to face with his father. Jacob Dawsey looked haggard and gray. He had sunken eyes and thin, smiling lips that revealed his big teeth. He looked as he had in the hours before Captain Cancer finally stole him away. Perry blinked, then fiercely rubbed his eyes, but when he opened them, his father still stared back. Somewhere in his brain, Perry knew he was hallucinating, but that didn't make the experience any less real. His father spoke.
"You always were a quitter, boy,"
Jacob Dawsey said, his voice the same thick growl that always preceded a beating.
"You get a little boo-boo, and now you want to give up? You make me sick."
Perry felt hot tears well in his eyes. He blinked them back. Hallucination or no, he would not cry in front of his father.
"Go away, Daddy. You're dead."
"Dead is still more of a man than you'll ever be, boy. Look at you. You want to give up? Let him win? Let him put you down?"
Perry felt anger surge.
"What the hell am I supposed to do? They're inside me, Daddy. They're eating me up from the inside."
Jacob Dawsey grinned, his thin, emaciated face showing the teeth of a skeleton.
"You gonna let him do that to you, boy? You gonna let him win? Stop acting like a woman and do something about it."
The steam steadily clouded the mirror, slowly obscuring Jacob Dawsey's face.
"You hear me, boy? You hear me? You do something about it!"
The mirror clouded over. Perry wiped at it, but now only his face stared back. Daddy was right. Daddy had always been right. Perry had been a fool to try and escape what he was. In a violent world, only the strong survive. Perry took a slow, deep breath and prepared his mind for what he had to do. Time to get his game face on. Chapter 61, The Call, Part 2. Officer Ed McKinley turned left onto Washtenaw Avenue and headed east towards Ypsilanti. Traffic slowed all around the Ann Arbor police cruiser, just a touch, even for people who traveled at the speed limit. In the passenger seat, Officer Brian Vanderpine stared out the window, far more alert and attentive than usual.
"Eight dead," Brian said. "Man, that's a lot."
"It's like the 10th time you said that, Brian," Ed said. "How about you give it a rest?"
"I just can't get over this. Shit like this doesn't happen in Ann Arbor."
"Well, it does now. I'm not surprised, really. We got foreigners from all over the damn planet going to school here, and every last one of them thinks America's evil."
"Yeah, we're evil, but they sure are happy to come here and get an education from us."
"Yeah, I guess the schools aren't evil, just everything else about our culture. Funny how that works out so well for them."
"Man, I'd love to find the bastard responsible for all this. You think the feds know what they're doing?"
Ed shrugged. "I don't know. Something fishy's going on, that's for sure. They show up exactly when this shit goes down, not before. We get no warning, just a body count." The radio squawked.
"Car 17, come back."
Brian grabbed the handset and thumbed the talk button.
"Car 17, go ahead."
"How far are you from the Windy White apartment complex?"
We're heading east on Washtenaw at Baldwin," Brian said. "Only a couple minutes from Windywood. What's up?"
"Disturbing the peace. Complaint is from an Al Turner who lives in apartment B303. Says the guy below him is screaming and has been for days. The screamer is listed as Perry Dawsey, apartment B203.
Brian turned to look at Ed, a quizzical look on his face.
"Perry Dawsey. Why does that name sound familiar?"
"I wonder if it's the same kid that played linebacker for U of M a few years ago."
Brian again thumbed the talk button.
"Roger, dispatch. We'll check it out."
"Be advised. Complainant says Dawsey is very large and potentially dangerous."
"Roger that. Car 17 out."
Brian hung up the handset. Ed frowned.
"Very large and potentially dangerous? That sure sounds like the Perry Dawsey I saw play."
Brian squinted against the bright winter sun. He remembered watching U of M's scary Perry Dawsey. Very large and dangerous certainly fit the bill. It was just a disturbing the peace. But he didn't like the sound of this call. Not one bit. Chapter 62. Play Through the Pain. In through the nose, out through the mouth. One last deep breath. Focus. Play through the pain. Perry reached up with his right hand and sank his fingers deep into the wound. He didn't bother trying to control his screams of pain. He just hooked his fingers and scooped. Fingernails scraping hard against his open flesh, he yanked the triangle's squishy black corpse out of his body. The tail offered only minute resistance before it broke off, weakened by rot that had turned the body into little more than paste. Perry tossed the handful of gore into the sink, where it landed in the trails of puke and steaming water. He scooped twice more, screaming anew each time, grabbing everything he could out of the wound. Blood again poured down his chest, running down his crotch, down his inner thighs, to form small puddles on the floor. Pain filled his mind, rusty barbed wire wrapped tightly around his soft brain, but he knew he had to stop the bleeding, stop it fast. He stared at the wound. It was now a fist-sized hole, and quite a bit beyond the abilities of simple band-aids. He scooped up the bloody washcloth from the floor and hopped into the kitchen. He pressed the cloth to the wound, jamming it painfully into the hole, trying to stem the flow of blood. The duct tape was in the junk drawer, silver and big and ever so sticky. He had to let go of the wound so he could use both hands to tear off big strips of tape, which he stuck to the edge of the counter. He again crammed the washcloth deep into the gaping, bleeding wound. He lashed a piece of tape on top of the cloth, then stuck it firmly to his back and chest. Repeating the process 5 more times, he had a duct tape starburst with arms spreading out from the wound, over his shoulder, over his chest, down his chest, and under his arm. Wasn't exactly the Mayo Clinic, but as Daddy used to say, good enough for who it's for. Bill's friends would be here any minute. It was time to go. He used a handful of paper towels to wipe the blood off his body as he hopped for the bedroom. He jammed clothes into the backpack. 2 pairs of jeans, 3 t-shirts, a sweatshirt, and all the clean underwear and socks he could find. With one leg rendered nearly useless, and his left shoulder screaming with pain every time he moved, he pulled on his jeans. Each second was an eternity of anxiety. He expected the door to crash inward, smashed open by one of those heavy door rammers you see on cops when the police break into yet another slime pit of a house. The door rammer, on which some clever soul would stencil the witty words, knock, knock, would be followed by goons in bio-warfare suits, every inch of their bodies covered, so they wouldn't come into contact with the triangles. They'd be toting big-ass guns, and they'd have itchy trigger fingers. He threw on a black Oakland Raiders sweatshirt and struggled with socks and hiking boots, his ravaged leg making even this simple task difficult. Perry wanted a weapon. Anything he could get his hands on, something to let him go down fighting, to go down like a Dossie. In the kitchen, he tossed the whole knife rack, chicken scissors and all, into his backpack. He grabbed his keys and coat. He didn't even give a second glance at Bill, who still stared blankly at the carpet. Bill, rudely enough, didn't bother to get up and see him out. Perry left the apartment, his eyes scanning up and down the hall, looking for soldiers. He saw no one. He realized he'd left the map inside, but he didn't need it. If he made it out of Ann Arbor alive, he knew exactly where he was going. He started to move down the hall, which was still bloody from his battle with Bill, when the triangles spoke again. And their words stunned him. It was the worst thing he'd heard yet.
A hatching is coming.
Chapter 63, Howdy Neighbor, Part 3.
The hatching is coming!
Perry's mouth went dry. His face flushed with hot blood. He felt his very soul shrivel and blacken, like an ant burned by a magnifying glass. Hatching. It was coming. He'd been right. It was like the caterpillar and the wasps. He'd served his purpose, and now it was time for their gruesome exit. His big body began to shiver uncontrollably.
You're hatching?
Not us. Someone else is nearby.
He felt a minor wave of relief combined with a trace of hope. Not the hope that he had been saved, but the feeling that there was someone else. Someone in the same predicament. Someone like him who could understand. Perry hopped towards the stairs that led to the outside door. He didn't notice his foot hit the blood-soaked carpet. Subsequent hops left a string of footprints with wet red traces that echoed his boots' tread pattern. It felt good to be dressed again. He'd felt scummy, all covered in blood, in clothes that should have been incinerated rather than washed. He was dressed and getting out of the apartment that had held him prisoner for days. His shoulder throbbed loudly where he'd scooped out the rotting triangle. The jostling backpack straps pulled against the washcloth and the wound, but the duct tape held firm. It was going to be a bitch removing that bandage. Maybe he'd be dead by then, and he wouldn't even have to worry about it.
"We're hungry. Feed us! Feed us!"
Perry ignored their words, concentrating instead on managing the stairs. He leaned heavily against the sturdy metal rail, cautiously taking one step at a time. It was amazing how much easier things were when you had 2 feet.
"Feed us now! Feed us now! A hatching is coming! A hatching!"
"Just shut up! I don't have any food."
He made it to the ground floor without incident. After days in the cramped apartment, it would be nice to be back outside again, no matter what the weather. It could be the burning pits of hell past that door, and he'd hop out whistling Singing in the Rain. A wave of overflow panic hit him, a blindside tackle that had his adrenaline level soaring before he realized the fear wasn't his own.
"What is it? What's happening?"
"Columbo is coming! Columbo is coming!"
The soldiers. Perry hopped out the door into the winter wind and blinding sun. The temperature was only a smidgen above zero, but it was a beautiful day. He made it to his car and put the key in the lock when his eyes caught the lines and colors of a familiar vehicle. His mind exploded with warning. About 50 yards away, an Ann Arbor police cruiser pulled into the apartment's entryway and headed in his direction. Perry hopped around the front of his car, which was tucked neatly under the carport's metal overhang. He wedged himself between the front bumper and the overhang, hiding from view. The cruiser slowed and pulled up against the sidewalk directly in front of the main door to Perry's building. Perry's instinct screamed at him. The enemy was only 15 feet away. 2 cops stepped out of the car but didn't look in his direction. They popped their batons into their belts, then walked towards the building with that relaxed, confident cop attitude. They entered his building, the dented metal door slowly swinging shut behind them. They were too late to save their little informant. They'd find the body within seconds, and then they'd come looking for Perry, shooting all the way. Brian Vanderpine was the first up the stairs. His feet thudded on the steps, which suffered the full brunt of his 215 pounds. Ed McKinley followed without a sound. Ed was always lighter on his feet, despite the fact that he outweighed Brian by 10 pounds. They didn't need to say anything going up the stairs to the second floor. It was just a noise complaint, no big deal, but given the day's events, every call had them on edge. Brian hoped Dossie lived alone. He really didn't want to deal with a domestic dispute. They were called to this apartment complex at least twice a week. Most of the time, people didn't realize how thin the apartment walls were and how noise carried. Usually, the appearance of uniformed cops at the door embarrassed the hell out of them, and they shut up quite nicely. Brian and Ed climbed the first half flight of 6 stairs, then turned to head up the next 6, when Brian stopped so suddenly that Ed bumped into him. Brian was looking down. Ed automatically looked at the same spot. Traces of red marked large footprints on the stairs. Brian knelt next to one of the footprints. He gently touched the print. His fingers came away with dabs of red. He rolled it around his fingertips for a second, then looked at Ed. "It's blood," Brian said. He'd known it was blood even before he examined it. He knew the smell. Brian stood. They both pulled their guns, then moved quietly up the steps, careful not to step on other red footprints. As they came up to the second floor, they saw the blood on the wall and the bright red puddles in the carpet. It was a lot of blood, probably from a severe wound. Large blood streaks led right under the door to apartment B203. Someone who was bleeding badly had crawled, or been dragged, into that apartment. They took positions on either side of the door, pulses rocketing, backs to the wall, guns pointed to the floor. Brian's mind worked feverishly. This blood was fresh, and there was enough to indicate the victim might even be bleeding to death. He had no doubt that the wound was caused by some kind of weapon. And if the victim was still in that apartment, he or she might be trapped in there with the assailant. Adrenaline surged through Brian's system. He reached down with his right hand and knocked hard on the door.
Police! Open up!
No one answered. The hallway remained deathly quiet. Brian knocked again, hitting the door even harder.
Police! Open this door!
He spun out to stand in front of the door. Giving a quick look to Ed, who nodded agreement and readiness, Brian put all of his 215 pounds into a push kick, aimed just below the door's handle. The wood crunched, but the door held fast. He kicked it again, harder this time. The lock's bolt ripped from the wall with a splintering of wood. The door slammed open. It suddenly occurred to Perry that his car was useless. The cops would be out of the apartment in seconds. They knew who he was. They would be looking for his car. Probably wouldn't make it 50 miles, but he also wouldn't make it far on foot.
The hatching is coming soon.
The hatching. Some poor bastard was at the end of his triangle rope. What would it look like? How bad would the pain be? The trip to Wajamiga would have to wait. He'd be lucky if he made it out of the parking lot, let alone all the way to Wajamiga. There was only one place he could go. Someone was close. Someone who was also infected. That person would understand Perry's condition, understand what he had done with Bill, hide him from the cops, who would be swarming all over this place in minutes.
Can we watch the hatching?
Yes, we should watch. Yes, watch and see.
Where is it? Tell me where to go, quickly.
Come this way.
Perry froze. The other voice, the female voice. It was faint, but clear.
Turn around.
He put his hands over his ears, his face a childlike expression of pure fear. Was all too much. Too damn much. But he couldn't panic now. Not when the cops would be rushing out of the apartment door in a matter of moments. He turned and found himself facing Building G.
Hurry, this way to safety.
He didn't understand and didn't want to. All he wanted to do was get away from the cops. Perry launched himself forward at a dead hop run, sprinting on the verge of losing his balance. He fell twice, hitting the snow-covered blacktop, landing face down both times, before scrambling madly to his feet. It took him only 15 seconds to reach Building G. Ryan Vanderpine and Ed McKinley would both remember every moment with total clarity. In their combined 25 years of police work, Brian's 14 and Ed's 11, they had never seen anything like the crazy shit in apartment B203. The door slammed open. Despite Brian's desire to point the gun into the apartment, he kept it trained at the floor. Nothing moved. Brian stepped inside. He immediately saw the body on the couch, bloody hands nailed to the wall with steak knives and some horrible parody of the crucifixion. Brian would check the body, of course, but he already knew that the man was dead. He tore his gaze from the corpse. The perp might still be in the apartment. There was blood everywhere. The smell hit him like a fist. The odor of sweat, of blood, of something horribly rotten and wrong in a way he couldn't immediately define. Brian pointed his gun straight down the short hall that led to the bathroom and bedroom. He was suddenly grateful for the dozens of calls he'd made to this complex, calls that made him familiar with these apartments, all of which had the same layout. Ed swung around to his right, pointing his gun into the tiny excuse for a kitchen.
Holy shit! Brian, look at this!
Brian took a quick peek. Dried blood covered the kitchen floor, so much that in most places, the white linoleum looked a dull shade of reddish-brown. Even the dining table was covered with dried blood. Brian moved down the hall, Ed only a few steps behind him. The tiny hall closet hung open and empty, except for one long coat, a gaudy Hawaiian shirt, and a large University of Michigan varsity jacket. That left only the bedroom and the bathroom. That smell, that wrong smell, was stronger as they reached the closed bedroom door. Brian stood half-covered by the hall corner and waved Ed to check the bathroom, which was open. Ed was in and out in 3 seconds, shaking his head to signify it was empty. He mouthed the words, "More blood." Brian knelt in front of the bedroom door. Ed stood behind him, a step back. They avoided standing close enough for one shotgun blast to take out both of them. Feeling his heart hammering in his chest and throat, Brian turned the handle and pushed the door open. Nothing. They quickly checked the closet and under the bed. Ed spoke.
Check the wounded man, Brian. I'm calling this in.
As Ed grabbed his handset and started talking to the dispatcher, Brian ran to the body. No pulse. The body was still warm. The man had just died, probably within the last hour. The victim sat on the couch, head hanging down, arms outstretched, a steak knife pinning each hand to the wall. Blood covered the area, soaking the victim's leg and leaving huge red stains on the worn couch cushions. The victim's nose was a disaster, broken and ravaged. The face, swollen, cut, completely black and blue. Blood had spilled down the man's face and soaked his shirt. Brian mentally pieced together the story, feeling his anger rise at the attack's savagery. The perp had attacked his victim in the hall, cut him, either with one of those knives or another weapon, then dragged him into the apartment and knifed him to the wall. The blows to the face either came in the hall or after his hands had been pinned. Shit like this wasn't supposed to happen in Ann Arbor. Fuck, shit like this wasn't supposed to happen anywhere. Violence and a domestic dispute was almost always followed up with remorse. Many times, the assailant would call the cops after he or she had done something to hurt a loved one. That wasn't the case here. Whoever had done this hadn't felt a damn shred of remorse. People who felt remorse didn't leave messages written on the wall in the blood of the dead victim. It was the worst butchering Brian had ever seen, and it would remain the number one smash hit throughout his career. Although he'd never forget a single, horrible detail, it was the writing on the wall that forever symbolized the savage slaying. Numerous bloody palm and fingerprints showed that the murderer had used his hands to smear a message above the victim's hanging head. A single word, written in bloody, 3-foot-high letters, that left still wet snail trails of red running down the wall. The word said, "Discipline." Chapter 64, Hot Prospect. Margaret kicked open the swinging men's room door. She leaned in and shouted urgently,
"Amos, let's go, man! We got another one!"
A toilet flushed. Amos lurched out of a stall, stumbling as he fought to pull up his pants. Margaret turned and sprinted down the hallway. Amos ran to keep up. She skidded to a halt in front of the elevator. Clarence Otto held the doors open. She and Amos entered, the doors shut, and Otto hit the button for the parking garage.
"How far is it from here?"
Clarence pulled out a map and gave it a quick study.
"About 10 minutes, give or take."
Margaret grabbed Clarence's strong arm, her face electric with urgency.
"What's the victim's condition? What are his symptoms?"
"I don't know that, ma'am. Dew is en route, backed up by 2 rapid response teams in full bio suits. I believe it's an apartment complex."
Margaret let go of his arm and tried to compose herself.
"Do you think we'll get this one alive?"
"I think so, ma'am," Clarence said. "Dew should already be there. The victim filled out a computer form. Instructions on that say to stay put and wait for help. I can't imagine anything going wrong at this point."
Chapter 65, The Great Escape. Perry shut the outside door behind him, took a quick look up the empty hallway, then glanced back through the window just in time to see one of the cops sprint out of Building B and jump into the police cruiser. The car's red and blue bubble lights flashed. Perry grinned sadistically.
"Fuck you, coppers," he whispered. "You'll never take me alive."
Maybe they hadn't known what to expect when they pulled up. They probably thought Bill would have Perry all hog-tied and ready for delivery. They'd underestimated Perry. He was sure they wouldn't do it again. He turned and looked down the hallway of Building G. He felt something strange. A kind of buttery warmth in his chest, perhaps an oily feeling deep inside. It was unlike anything he'd ever felt before. Perry realized he'd felt that feeling coming on as he'd sprinted for Building G, but once inside, it grew stronger.
"The hatching is coming! The hatching is coming!"
The triangle's rambling reminded Perry that his escape was only temporary. More cars were surely on the way. It was only a matter of time before the cops spotted him. He'd be shot down, of course, killed while, quote, trying to escape, end quote, whether he hopped his little ass off or lay down on the ground in front of 20 witnesses. It wouldn't matter. the soldiers would either buy the witness's silence or make them disappear as well. He had to get inside. He had to find the other triangle victim.
Which way do we go, fellas?
They had been the ones, after all, who'd shown him the truth about the soldiers, about Billy the informant. They had been the ones to tell him that men in uniforms would come, and they were right. They had been the ones to warn him in time to escape the cops.
Go to the third floor.
Damn, they learned fast. There was now almost no delay between them hearing a new concept, like directions, and their mastery of the terminology. He hopped up the stairs. With each step, the oily feeling in his chest grew a little bit stronger. By the time Perry reached the third floor, he felt the strange sensation in every fiber of his being. He moved down the hall until his triangle stopped him.
This is it.
Apartment G304. On the door was a little branch wreath, painted in soft pastels, with little wooden ducks holding a pink welcome sign. Country art. Perry hated country art. He knocked. There was no answer. He knocked again, louder and faster. Again, no answer. Perry leaned in so his mouth almost touched the door's edge. He spoke quietly, but loud enough to be heard on the other side.
I'm not leaving. I know what you're going through. I know about the triangles.
The door opened a crack, snapping taut the chain lock. Perry heard a stereo softly playing Whitney Houston's version of I'm Every Woman. A chubby face peered through the door, a face that might have been attractive had the woman had any sleep in the past 4 or 5 days. She looked angry, harried, and scared, all at the same time. As soon as he saw the face, the oily sensation damn near overwhelmed him. Now he knew what it was. He somehow sensed the presence of another host. Before she even said a word, Harry knew she was infected.
"Who are you?"
she asked. He couldn't miss the tinge of hope in her voice, hope that this man had come to save her. Perry spoke in a calm voice.
"I live in this complex. My name is Perry. Let me in so we can talk about what we're going to do."
Through the crack of the door, he could only see 2 inches of her face, but it was enough to show she wasn't convinced.
"Are you from the government? From CSI?
Fear hung from her words. Perry felt his patience running thin.
"Look, lady, I'm in the same fucking boat you are. I've got the triangles too, okay? Don't you feel it? Now open the door before someone sees us and calls the soldiers."
The last word struck home. Her eyes opened up wide as she took in a quick hiss of breath and held it. She blinked twice, trying to decide if she should believe, then she shut the door. Perry heard the chain slide free. The door opened, and she looked at him expectantly, hopefully. Perry hopped in quickly, shoved her out of the way, then slammed the door shut and locked it, chain and deadbolt and even the shitty lock on the knob, thank you very much. He turned around with a light hop, and found himself staring at a huge butcher knife poised only a few inches from his chest.